Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 143. This is a show about Linux. We talk about all sorts of Linux topics, and it has been too long since we've done this show. Probably not long for you guys, because we're pushing them out on a regular basis, but I haven't got to talk to my good friend here in quite a while. My good friend, of course, I'm talking about Stephen McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Door Geek, a.k.a. the Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
In all, fantastic, except for the stress of my youngest one going into kindergarten. He wasn't in the school for more than 5 hours, and they contacted my wife asking if we've considered holding him back a year. Needless to say, he got a quote-unquote red day. They have red, yellow, and green days, and then star days. Star days are super, utterly rare. First day he got a red day, turns out he rolled himself up in a carpet because he was mad at people. He kicked the teacher's calf, and he wouldn't come in from recess. Second day, they called us up and said, "We need to schedule a meeting. Can you come in Friday at 8 a.m.? Second day, he got a red day. He apparently screamed at a girl when she apparently took a toy from him and wouldn't give it back. So of course, the loudest one is the one that gets caught, the one who does retribution. That's common in all schools. Third day was yesterday. He got a yellow day. We go into school this morning. I'm fully prepared to utterly unload on these people like a bad disease, like, you know, just unload on them horrifically. And we get into school, and they basically bend over backwards to say, "We just want to see if there's anything we can do that would help him behave better. Da-da-da-da. Do you have any tips, techniques, ideas, thoughts?" So they just gave up, like, wholeheartedly on us. Comes home today, he has a green day. So he wasn't there 5 hours. They want to kick him out. And the fourth day there, he has a green day. So maybe they were a little bit early judgmental. I'm just saying.
Maybe they did some duck-duck-going and found out who you were and thought, we need to get our stuff together.
Now, maybe they realized you cannot treat all kids like kid objects, and some of them you actually have to communicate with, especially ones that are communicated with like they're adults since the time they were born. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I make it a point to communicate with my children like they are my equals. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they expect to be treated as equals.
There you go.
Yeah, and if they don't get that, then I'm sorry, but you know, I can't help them.
Well, I agree.
But the part that's gone fantastic is my job number one. I've been at my current employer now, I think it's almost or nearly 18 years. Which I never thought would have happened before this job, because the longest time I had a job before that was 8 months, maybe. Mm. Okay, after 18 years and after 6 or so years of being what's called a database specialist 2, first quickie, the quickest way to a dead-end job in IT is to work on databases, because you either are a junior database engineer or a senior database engineer. And that's basically it. There's really only two classifications of database people. And there's no way to progress higher. So I started a job. I believe it's called System Information Technology Specialist. And if anyone can make sense of that, hats off to you, because the title makes no sense. But I just started it on Wednesday. And what I am is essentially research, development, insight, hand-holding, helping anyone underneath our group and outside of our group. And they look to me for forward-thinking solutions. I'll say that. That doesn't mean I'm going to have any actual direct input. I mean, I'm just going to be a suggester is what I look at it. But that was good. It's different. What I wanted was a different job, and this is definitely different. It also came with my two prerequisites, one of which being I'm not responsible for anybody because I am not a good supervisor. I will either do all the work myself or I will crush and destroy anyone beneath me with work. there's nothing in between with me. And I acknowledge that. And that's why I do not want people underneath me. And two, I will never get any kind of official work phone ever.
So you can't be contacted good. In any waking moment.
The only time they will contact me is when I walk into the building and check in for the day.
There you go.
And that's the way I like it, because I'm a little bit busy, maybe. I don't know.
Outside of work.
And I have family.
Yeah. Well, perk number three, and you're probably not going to mention this because you're so humble. If you're not following Dora on Google Plus, do so, because he posted photos of his cubicle / office / desk, and it is nice.
Well, it's as nice as anyone else on the floor, except for now I also have a window. And after 18 years, I'm really happy I got a window, just for the fact that now I'll get better cell service.
There you go.
And save battery life. But what I really wanted was a physical door. I want so bad to just stand up, walk around my desk, and go close. Slam. Not slam, just close.
Now you got to slam it every once in a while, and then just start yelling as if you're on an important conference call. And then record that and loop it every 8 to 10 minutes.
Right. So maybe after 25 years, I'll get a door, and I'm okay with that.
There you go. Well, yeah, we got to get some time. I forgot.
But
go ahead. Sorry.
But I'm still not in my new cube because I still don't have any computer to actually work on.
That won't stop you, man. You got a Chromebook. You got a couple phones. Your Nexus 7 in
to
there.
To work on.
Dude.
I can't connect any of those to the network.
There's a podcast on the network called Android App Addicts where you can log in and use different user profiles in case you need to have one for work, for a guest, for yourself. Check it out. It's a good show. There are at least three hosts on there that bring consistently different applications.
Yes, exactly.
I forgot to introduce myself. Not that I should need it. I'm Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, a.k.a. The Ice Machine. And I reinforced the fact I'm the Ice Machine for a post I put on Google Plus this past few days, because I was in Vegas on business for 5 days, and I took a photo with the Ice Machine at the Venetian Hotel on a floor which shall remain nameless, and give a big double thumbs up. I was there getting ice for a undisclosed activity. And I thought I might as well snap a picture, and I considered it a warming up my body for OLF, which is only 2 short weeks away.
Good man. And I will say I have a little bit of more good news, and that is I basically owned quote unquote Podnuts now for about 8 months. Mm-hmm. One of the first things going into the network was expansion. I wanted to expand the shows. I wanted to do more shows myself, but I also wanted to bring more talent on the network, because there are more than a couple people out there that I respect greatly that I would like to have as a member of the Podnuts family. In the last basic month, we've launched 3 new shows. In the last 48 hours, we launched 2 of them. We have the server show, myself, Black Hammer, Knucklehead Tech, and Chad Wallenberg, a.k.a.
Slugworth.
Slugworth, thank you. Talking about enterprise grade and small business grade and home network grade networks and servers and services and protocols and all this kind of very high-level stuff. Chad is a unbelievable wealth of knowledge. I cannot thank him enough. Josh and Jeff make me look like I'm a child, because they also know so much more than me. I'm literally sucking so much information off them every week, every fortnight, every 2 weeks. And I'm trying to publish that too. So hopefully other people can also listen to that show and learn as I learn, basically. And if they have questions or comments, Chad is more than willing to take any question on. Josh and Jeff will go to the ends of the earth to try to find a solution to any question that is asked. So that show to me is really high level. If you really want to learn, listen to that show. If you do not want to learn, do not listen to that show. The second show is Geeksters, formerly with Geeksters.tv. period, super nice guys talking about the weekly routine of getting customers, fixing computers, cleaning computers, mobile device repair, and the business aspect and the functional aspect of getting all this kind of stuff done. The amount of experience they have combined is great, and they do everything they can to share all of it every week. It's a complete brain dump. And Martin Rambo Bando is the man. Tim Bauermeister is also going to be at OLF, so both of those guys are going to be there. Tim and Martin have such a great rapport. They're the regulars. We also have Mitch Heyman, who's on, who is the producer, super nice guy, and fixes friends and family's computers, so he has his own viewpoint on the business. Mm-hmm. Freddie, technically, he's a commercial pilot, but he also sinks his teeth into fixing computers, so he is the like ultimate hobbyist guy. And when Eric Ardini is available, he's on. This guy has what seems like 20 years of experience fixing computers and just portrays it and just speaks on it very eloquently. So when they're all on together, it is a fantastic show. Even when it's just Tim and Mitch, it is still fascinatingly fantastic. I cannot thank those guys enough. Lastly, Mobile Dynasty, formerly Droid Nation. Now it's on Podnox, and it's called Mobile Dynasty. It's not about Android rooting and ROMing. Big, big thing out there. It is about going deep into settings, deep into customizing, complete ownership of everything mobile. Whether it's iOS, iPads, Android, Tizen, Firefox phone, Windows phone, anything mobile, we're going to do our best to get our hands on, completely explore, and completely own. Mm-hmm. And that's with Black Hammer, Knucklehead Tech, Ellis, Clark Kent Owens, and myself. But the whole kicker is that's not all. There is more shows coming within weeks. And to really keep abreast of it, just go to podnuts.com.
Yep, keep going there. I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag here. I'm not doing anything specifically, but I can think of at least three or four more shows which should be folded in or created soon. So, and they are, there are some good ones. I'll say that. So, yeah, Podnuts is growing. Even in the short amount of time that Doris had it in his hands, we've already done some great things, and it's just going to get better. So, definitely keep checking that main website.
Yeah, and the main goal, I'll say, with any show, it will never even get off the ground or launched unless we believe we have enough gumption for the host to do it for a year straight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it will. That doesn't mean it won't. That just means we have to believe there's enough material, enough camaraderie, enough possible content for it to go on. And everything we've brought on so far, I think, literally has endless amounts of content.
Definitely. Well, speaking of content, we're going to kind of flip this show on its ear. This show, we're going to start with the emails first, because we once again have a backlog. I consider that a good problem to have, but not necessarily even a problem. So we're going to do that first and see what else we can fit into the show.
Cool.
So, right off the bat, Baron Labuchain writes, I have a question. I have Smart HDD tools installed on my Ubuntu server, and it's showing read errors in Webmin. Smart HDD tools, is that only normal read ECC error or not? Finally, is there any good server monitor software that can email me if the server goes down? Thanks for all the good work and help. I love your show and listen to it 8 hours a day, every day. Keep up the good work. Baron Labuchain.
Boom is all I got to say. Boom. Okay. The very last episode of the server show has not yet been published. It is literally going to be called monitoring, because there is such a wide girth of possibilities when it comes to monitoring, because you can do home monitoring, small business monitoring, enterprise monitoring, and this whole bunch of different types of monitoring. You have bandwidth monitoring, you have device monitoring, you have software monitoring. So there's lots of different types of monitoring. Again, Chad, Josh, and Jeff bring so much knowledge about it. The one application I'll mention super quick is called Cacti. It's like cactus, but it's called Cacti, mm-hmm. which can give you unbelievable amounts of bandwidth monitoring and bandwidth reporting and information. Also, I did not know this. Chad said there are many home routers that you can basically install Cacti, point it towards that home router, and get information off of it just like you're an enterprise and you're monitoring your gateway to the outside world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. For desktop type monitoring, you can look at something like Zenos. Mm-hmm. Again, all this is in the server show. I don't want to rehash it all, but I will say this. Windows monitoring is far more advanced than Linux monitoring because Windows is Windows. Linux is 300 different distributions, mm-hmm. okay? So it's much more advanced on Windows than Linux. It is still possible, but it's not as advanced. And the last thing I'll throw out there is pfSense. pfSense is not necessarily bandwidth monitoring. It is closer to being network monitoring, where you can also do deep packet inspection on your network. So there's three ones right there. Highly encourage you, podnas.com/TSS. Subscribe. You will get knowledge from people who know far more than me about monitoring. Mm-hmm.
And Baron, if you're listening to this, I should have already sent you a link include you in an email chain, because when I got this, I immediately emailed the hosts of the server show knowing that they were looking for good content or topics. And I had three or four of them get back to me, and they actually just decided to fold all that into an episode. So definitely check out that episode, but I will also forward you those responses as well.
Right now, really quick, ECC corrections or ECC error handling. You take a brand new hard drive out of the box, you hook it up, you run the right tools like Smart Control, you will see ECC errors. Every drive now has lots of ECC errors. The question is, when is it too much? And there's no solid line I can give you where it is too much. ECC errors are common, very common. Now, if you have thousands of them happening, that's probably too many. If you have 20 or 30 happening, that's probably just flat out normal. But no matter what, always, always backup, or even better, BitTorrent sync. Copy all of your data off just in case, because any hard drive can die at any time. Spinning disks are a little bit more easy to identify when problems happen, but a couple ECC errors are very normal.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Baron, yeah, definitely check out that episode, and I hope we gave you some items here which you can use to help you with that endeavor. We're going to move on here. Bernard Heyer writes, says, "Hello there. I'm a big fan. Over the last 3 months, I have been burning through your podcast during my commute into my office and back each day. They are great. Thank you. I should be up to date by tomorrow, but just finished episode 136, and I thought I should add something useful finally. You had a question around SharePoint, of which when he says arg, as if he's throwing his hands up in the air screaming at the skies. There are two projects I would look at as options. Firstly, Alfresco, and secondly, Kablink Vibe. That's K-A-B. L-I-N-K Vibe. Alfresco is great for document management and is very popular, but in terms of collaboration or workflow, not amazing. Kablink Vibe at kablink.org in its various iterations is awesome in my books. It has excellent collaboration features and easy workflow you can incorporate. For Linux noobs like myself, you can also just download a VMware appliance from SourceForge and you are good to go. It has been around for a long time and is supported by Novell. If you have to get fancy, there are really cool options for SIP asterisk, IAM, and other types of integration. I myself run Windows 8, the pain, as I need to do macros in Excel, but then dual boot into Linux Mint on my production laptop and home desktop OpenSUSE. Big fan of theirs. I agree. Wink, wink. Is the primary for my second laptop. Mint is just easy for the others in the house to use, so it keeps my life easy with the familiar cinnamon interface. I will try to send some more stuff to you guys when I get time, but I live in wine country near Cape Town, South Africa, and a great thing that is happening here is a surge in microbrewing, which may reduce time spent on getting cool stuff to you. Keep up the good work, Bernard. And he gives us some links to Kablink, which we'll put in the show notes.
Yeah, I got to say, first off, Bernard, thank you very much for the links, because so many times when someone mentions something, I never get the exact right site. I get people collaborating with it or talking about it or doing something with it, but some reason I'm not hitting it, quote unquote, here recently. A, I love Novell. As a company, I want to support Novell passionately. We technically now have to use Novell at my 9-to-5 in a manner of speaking, because we have a mainframe server and they bought a attachmate is what it's called. And we have to use that. So I want to support them more. I will say, here's the only problem with my type of enterprise environment is we rarely want a tool that does more than one task. Two tasks, maybe. For a tool that can do many, many, many things, it's typically bad for us because we are not going to use asterisk types. We're not going to use anything on SIP. That will never happen, period. But what it can do, and first of all, I got to say, it has a great name, Kablink. That's just a fantastic name. So I liked the idea of it. I looked at it. Alfresco, the reason I really first got attracted to that was they had a community version I could test and play with, and then they had an enterprise version that had support. Where I'm working, if something does not offer paid support, then it must not be good. That's where they're starting to draw the line, where before it had to be by someone like Microsoft or some huge company before it was considered good. Now they've changed it to where as long as they offer paid support, well, then it has to be good. So it's getting closer to free software, open source, but not quite yet. One of my main goals in this establishment is to help my division share information seamlessly with each other. So Kablink looked very possible. I will say, I don't know how much document collaboration is desired, only because 98% of the people who work there don't comprehend what it even means. And if they saw it happening on their computer, they would probably put in a help desk call and say, my computer's infected. It's typing by itself.
or it's haunted.
Yeah. So document collaboration might be a little bit too advanced for this area. But everything else about this tool does look top-notch. And what I'm in shock about is so many tools exist that now I don't want to sound cocky, but even I never heard of. All I do is look for tools and processes and applications and suites to do things. I look for weeks on about document collaboration and data stores of documents, and I never even heard of this. So I cannot thank Bernard enough for sharing this kind of knowledge. This is the perfect example of, if you think you don't know anything as a listener and you can't contribute anything, you are completely wrong. There is so little about everything, period, that I know. I am just one person. You people know more than I know just by numbers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Keep sending this kind of information in. It is genuinely appreciated. This is the kind of stuff that makes me a better employee at my 9-to-5 and a better Linux person. So I love
it. Well, and on top of that, he gave us a great new location for a Linux Fest due to all the surge in microbrewing.
Good point.
See?
Valid.
I mean, that's just, it was like a little bit of glitter on the bow of the package that he gave us. It's like, oh, and by the way, there's this. Mm-hmm. There's just a little bit of this.
Yeah. Microbrewing equals serenity, dare I say?
Experimentation. Mm-hmm. Collaboration like thinking. Yeah. Exactly. I'm all about it. Well, good good luck with that, Bernard. And I hope that that doesn't prohibit you from getting caught up in the future, so we don't hear from you another 50 episodes thinking, I just came out of my stupor.
Well, if we hear from him and we know it's had an effect, they'll have a lot of misspellings.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that's okay.
Yeah, we're completely fine with that, as long as there's good content involved. Okay. So Travis writes in. He says, "Hello, Steve and Cody. I am in the process of switching my cloud storage services over to BitTorrent Sync." Good man. "I'm still in the testing phase, but so far have started syncing my downloads directory between all of my boxes and have started backing up all of my ROMing-related data from my Android to my PC. I am having a bit of trouble getting BitTorrent Sync to start at boot on my Pi. After copying a script from a tutorial online to init.t and running update-rc.d, I get an inserve error saying that there is a loop between BTSync and MiniDLNA. I have bookmarked a number of possible fixes and feel fairly confident that I can get the problem resolved, but I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about the process of creating scripts in the init.t directory and some common problems that can occur. I have had a few similar problems in the past and have always been able to solve them, but I don't have as much understanding exactly on what is going on. By the way, I have definitely missed a few Linux The Rest of Us episodes, so please forgive me if this has already been discussed. I appreciate the help and absolutely love the show and the Podnext network in general. Thanks again, Travis Myers, also known as Pseudo Coffee."
Pseudo Coffee, what a good name.
Yeah, no doubt.
Very good. Me and Travis did have a couple back and forth. I will say he's all up and running now. What he basically did was blew away his Raspberry Pi completely. Mm-hmm. And he followed, I believe, the tutorial that's actually on the BT Labs site, the one that talks about OwnCloud and BitTorrent Sync, where you can make your hybrid box.
Okay.
He used the BitTorrent Sync tutorial in there for his solution. Mm-hmm. Now, a quick announcement about BitTorrent Sync. It is now also available on iOS. The reason I mention it is, hypothetically, I have an Android phone. My wife has an iOS phone, mm-hmm. an iPhone. I could put BitTorrent Sync on that phone. I can put the BitTorrent Sync on my phone. I can put the BitTorrent Sync on my home computer, Windows, Mac, or Linux. And I can have all of our pictures instantaneously backed up and synced between both of our devices. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of seamless transparency that BitTorrent Sync can allow. And it's peer-to-peer, so we're not reliant or beholden or in danger of companies changing terms of service or shutting down. With that said, BitTorrent Sync is not perfect. It's technically in beta now. Mm-hmm. It's made it past alpha. It's in beta.
But a very strong beta from day one.
Oh, yeah. In my opinion, the alpha version of this software was more solid than some paid solutions I've seen, and just as solid as final version solutions I've heard of. It just works, and it just works great. On my Linux box, I will say the only thing I had to do to get true rock solid performance was turn off DHCP and set a hard IP address on my hybrid box. And since then, it's worked fantastically. And you can even do stuff like bandwidth limiting. Now, init.d was the thing he was talking about. Okay. Init.d, first off, is an area on your computer that gets initialized when mode changes happening. Now, the typical Linux user never has a mode change, ever, except for when they turn their computer on. When you log into a different state of the server, and I don't mean actually log in, I just mean initiate, i.e. you get to the login screen, you're already into init 3, I want to say it is. Init.d is a placeholder where scripts can reside to start up, shut down, and restart daemon-type services. Perfect example, if you have a web server on your box, you want that web server to be up and running before you log in, okay? The normal Windows users have the startup folder. This is not the startup folder. This is the services that happen on Windows. Pre-login, these things start up. So init.d is basically like that.
So let me ask a quick question involved with that right now from a layman point of view. Now, is... hypothetically, I put in... I mean, from what he sounds like, he put in a script that didn't work. So it caused problems. Now, is that... Is that just said and done, or is he able to then go back and take that out and then revert back to his state before that?
If you delete that script, then you're right back before that.
Okay.
What it sounds like is the problem was actually not with that script. The problem was with his BitTorrent sync install.
Oh, okay. Got it.
If I had to guess, that's what it sounded like, which is why when he blanked and started over, it worked. And I will say, the only careful thing you got to know about initd scripts are the easiest thing you can do in the world is just look at another script and emulate it. Odds are it's going to work similar to the one that you want to do already. They already exist. There isn't a wide range of things you can do in them except for stop a service, start a service, or restart a service.
Okay.
But I am in no shape, way, or form a init.d script guru at all. And since I just made a couple words up, I'll also mention Jerry Mancuso, longtime Podnut supporter.
Love Jerry. He's a good guy.
Really good guy. Understands Tasker on Android very well. I'll just say that. Obviously, he's a smart guy to know Tasker. He went into Urban Dictionary and he added the word methical. So, Jerry Mancuso, I salute you, sir. You are a very good man.
Ditto. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad that, it hasn't been very long since Android had the BT client, right? It's been maybe a month. Right.
Well, here's the thing. You could get it from BitTorrent Labs for 3 months, at least 3 months,
okay.
But it's not been official in the Android market.
Right. So it wasn't widely available or easy to install for someone who is like really kind of, you know, dipping their toe in and getting an installation.
Exactly.
There. Yeah. And with the installation of with the availability of the iOS version, I know that a certain freedom hater extraordinaire will be very happy to hear that.
Oh, yeah. As soon as I saw that, I immediately had to ding him.
Yep. He can get all 7 iPads, you know, one for each day of the week, you know, his couple of, you know, Power Macs, you know, all of his kids' phones, his wife's phone, the spares he has in a closet at home, you know, just hooked up, ready to go, just in case, you know, maybe he wants a white one today, maybe he wants a black one, and then, you know, with the newer, you know, potentially the iPhone 5Cs, he can have, you know, different colors for each one of the rainbow, he'll have them.
Right.
And I'm only saying this to a certain extent because he's in the chat right now, probably cackling.
Right.
Stop sending me requests from my gobstopper fella.
Right. Now, really quick, turn over in the chat. Methical was a word I made up at least 30 shows ago.
Yeah.
I like to believe that one of my goals in life is to be methical. I like to try to believe that I'm morally honest to myself and my family and my friends, and I like to believe that I am ethical in my behaviors and actions. So I made up the word methical. Now, with that said, no one is perfect. I am not methical. I strive to be methical. That's what I'll say.
There you go. Good explanation. Okay. Moving right along. And Jeff Owens, our good friend, Black Hammer, one of the many hosts of the Server Show and Mobile Dynasty. He says, hey, Dor, 2 items. Can you mention on Linux the Rest of Us how to create a symlink? I also have to look it up, and I was just asked this and have only done it once myself. Secondly, is there any program like Sydi, that's SYDI, that runs in Linux? I'm looking for that hardware inventory. I thought there was a way to pipe it into a text file via the command line, but Tribbles must be munching my brain cells. Thanks, Jeff Owens, aka Black Hammer.
Yeah, Black Hammer's a really good guy.
Yes.
Okay, really quick, the reason first off he got interested in symlinks, I believe, was because Android, when you go from version to version, they change little bit of back-end things. One of the things that recently got changed was how the SD card gets accessed. But because Android is Linux, and if you want your SD card to act and react like it did before, you can create a symlink to it. Okay, you can literally get an Android terminal emulator, log into it as root, and create a symlink. What a symlink is, if for Windows users, shortcuts, except how your brain thinks a shortcut should work. In actuality, if you create a shortcut on your Windows desktop to your C drive, it's a file there called LNK. And that file is nothing more than a pointer or a redirector. So it's not actually a shortcut. It's just a link to someplace else, hence the extension LNK. A symlink in Linux is much closer to being like a portal gun. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what a portal gun is, I can't explain it to you any other way except for a wormhole. Okay. On Linux, if you put a symlink to, let's say, the slash root folder, and then if you go into your desktop, hit select all and hit copy, you are not copying a link to your root folder. You are copying your desktop and everything in your root folder. Mm-hmm. It is literally a virtual hole, a virtual placeholder to the other place. And essentially, it almost doesn't even exist unto itself. It is only directly going to the other place.
Now, I know I've asked this before in a different way, but since we brought it up again, I'm going to ask about it a different way. If I create a symlink, let's just say, to my slash music folder, which is in slash home, you know, Cody Cooper slash home, mm-hmm. or slash music, right. And that symlink is on my desktop, and then I move the music folder to a different directory, doesn't the symlink still go to my music folder even when I change it?
I believe it matters how you move that folder.
Okay.
If you drag and drop it in Nautilus or in your desktop file manager, I do believe the link will follow it.
Okay.
But if you go into a terminal and just say MV space in it, I don't believe it follows it. Now, to create a symlink...
No, go ahead. Sorry. No. Oh, I was going to say, or if you like happen to like move it off like to an external drive to back it up, but then accidentally delete it on the home and then move it back to like a different directory. Yeah.
Right. Now, there's really two types of symlinks. There's soft symlinks and there's hard symlinks. I don't completely understand the difference, except for I believe hard links leave more quote unquote residue where they're created, and symlinks are much softer, they're much lighter, they're much more dynamic. If you want more details, I'm sorry, you got to ask a guru, a command line wizard, i.e. not me. But to create a symlink, it's really easy. LN is the command. LN space and the place you want to link from to the place you want to link to. I honestly don't know any way in any Linux GUI interface to like drag and drop or right click and say new symlink or anything like that. The only way I've ever seen to really make one is in the command line. With that said, I guarantee you somebody out there who's listening knows of a GUI tool to create symlinks. I just don't know it.
Yeah, that would be nice, some place where you can drop in, you know, the outgoing destination and the incoming destination, you know, like the, yeah, I think that would be neat.
Yeah, it's LN space dash S for soft one, because that's the one that everyone likes to use. Mm-hmm. Space path to file, space path to symlink.
Okay.
Okay, now, city. SYDI. City is a set of visual basic scripts that can be ran from a Windows box. And what it does is you can scan parts of your network, sets of your network, or your entire network. And as long as you, the person running that, has the administrator rights on those other boxes, it will pull back software and hardware information off of all of those boxes. Now, it's a very powerful tool, very well-liked tool by the people that do use it. But I know of nothing on Linux that is the equivalent to City. I can say applications like Xenos and Nagios, I believe, can get close to City, but there's really nothing I know that can do it like City does it. You would be much better off doing like nmap scans of your entire network, getting all the addresses, and then doing like, what is it called? Cluster SSH command to all the boxes at once to get information and put the information in a centralized repo. But there, I mean, nothing nothing is as easy. It's easy to use to get city-like results from a Linux box. Now, City can scan Linux boxes as long as your user account with your user credentials has those same rights. But it might not be giving him exactly what he's looking for from a Linux box.
Okay. Well, we gave you some good tips there. Jeff, I hope that works out for you. Please report back either way, either through Voxer or you can send another email, and we'll definitely fold it into the show soon. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. So, Derek, I want to say Theophile, but that can't be right. I'm going to say Theophily. Derek Theophily writes, "Hello, Stephen Cody. Please, can you help me with a little problem I'm having with the file system? I blow away my Windows partition, which I hardly used anyway, and I've gone to Linux Mint 15 Cinnamon all the way on my laptop." Good for you, Derek. "I have a 10 gigabyte root partition ext4 with a 284 gigabyte home partition ext4 and a 4 gig swap partition. There is also a 284, I would say, gig extended partition, maybe? I don't know. You said 284. I have attached a screenshot of gparted, if that helps. I don't really know why the extended partition is there, to be honest. I have this set up on both my laptop and desktop. The only difference is my desktop has an 8 gig swap. The problem I am having is when I boot up, a window pops up in the top right-hand corner saying the volume file system root has only 24.1 megabytes of disk space remaining. I also attach a screenshot of my file system. I can't see why my file system is full, and I don't have anything. I don't save anything to me root. It's all, hold on. I can't see when my file system is full. I don't save anything to it. Me root. It's all saved in my home partition, and I now am unable to save files because the message pops up telling me I'm out of space. Can you help? What am I doing or have I done wrong? The same thing happens on both my machines, and I can't work out why. Which is why I am turning to you guys. Thanks for all your help, and I look forward to hearing from you. Kind regards, Derek Theophily." Derek, from the sound of this, it sounds like your extended, well, especially since the size of your extended partition and your home partition are the same, if I'm reading your email correctly, that might have something to do with it. Do you think he mapped it somehow incorrectly during install door?
No, but that's a really good guess.
Okay.
I will say that me and Derek did go back and forth a couple of times. And here's the root of his problem. He did nothing wrong. He did absolutely nothing wrong. It was a couple things that happened that caused this error message to happen. One, he's on a distribution that's been around for a while, and apparently he's had it installed for a little bit of time. This is not a fresh install. I first knew that. When I saw this, I said to him, "This is not a new install, is it?" He said, "No, I've had it for almost a year." What happened is a twofold thing. He made his root partition 10 gigs, which at install time was fine. But in Linux, when you get kernel upgrades, it always keeps old kernels around. Okay. So he kept getting kernel upgrade, and so it's taking up more and more space in his root partition. Now, two quick fixes is A, extend your root partition. My by default is 20 gigs, or B, uninstall old Linux kernels. Now, typically in Linux with everything else, you have Firefox 14, then you get 15. It replaces Firefox 14. Everything in Linux does do that except for the kernel. You always have backups. And that's why after you have an install for a while, if you see the grub menu at the boot, you'll notice you can go back into the old kernels. This is kind of like safe mode-esque for Windows. They leave it around because it's really good. It's a good idea to leave around, but it's also a good idea once in a while to clean it up. This is not part of the normal Ubuntu maintenance routine that people are told about. So I sent him the two solutions. The easiest solution is to just extend the root partition. Now, that is almost a dangerous task to do. Let me first precede it with: an extended partition is really not a partition. An extended partition is merely a container for other partitions. we are limited by hardware addressing how many partitions we can have on any physical disk. When you create an extra partition, you're basically creating a cubbyhole inside of a cubbyhole. So you can have extended partitions inside of extended partitions inside of extended partitions inside of extended partitions if you want a 20-boot system kind of thing. So he had an extended partition, and the extended partition is filled, which is honestly the way it should be. But the root partition was too small. Now, if you pull up gparted and you look from left to right, the left edge of every partition is the vital part of the partition, especially a bootable partition. So your Windows C drive or your Linux slash directory or your slash boot directory. You cannot move the left side of that partition or you will deem your computer unbootable.
Okay.
Your master boot record points to the beginning of that partition to know where to go when it's time to boot. The right side you can flux in and out all day long and go crazy with. Because his root partition, when he showed me the screenshot, was already on the left all the way, I felt very safe in saying, go ahead and extend your root partition if you want, or delete your old kernels. I believe he opted to not delete his old kernels, just in case he needed them, and he extended his partition, rebooted, message gone.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he at least got an answer, because it sounded like both of the machines were essentially rendered useless because he couldn't save files to them. So I'm glad I got him some help that way. And as widely used as Linux Mint is, you know, if that were to become a problem for someone else, hopefully they can get that information from the show. So thank you for writing in, Derek.
Yeah, I honestly cannot remember what version Linux Mint is up to right now. I want to say
17.
No, it is 15.
16, something like that.
For some reason, I kept thinking 19. Shows you how often I go to the homepage.
That's your favorite distro, Fedora. That's up to 19.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I don't know if you guys know this, but he loves bleeding edge stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So, future reference, I always make my slash directory 20 gigs. But also, the main reason I don't have this problem, I rarely leave something installed for any length of time, because if it is possible to cause corruption or destroy an operating system, I do it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the whole reason I got into fixing Windows computers, because I kept breaking my own. You know? It happens.
Yep, you got that right. And you might as well have precautions in place for how to either revert back or quickly fix it if something like that does happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those are the emails we have for the week. We're going to roll into a few links here, and then we'll probably be good. Dor brought this next one here.
Yeah. We had a link. We had an email maybe last show, maybe the show before that, asking about, do I cover wine in any of my videos? No, I don't. I don't, because it's too Wild Westy, where you don't know if something's going to go smooth or something's going to explode in your face with wine, unless you really research it and you know exactly everything that's going on. I wanted to put a link in there because I like using interfaces for wine. I don't like using wine by itself. And the link I put in is to the Wine HQ current third-party applications for Wine. Think of these as pre-configured wizards to help you achieve success with Wine applications. Hmm. Among them, Crossover. Crossover is the holy grail. If you need to run, especially Microsoft Office, seamlessly on Linux, Crossover Office, I guarantee you everything you need to work will work, that I know of. There's also Play on Linux. Play on Linux is my go-to tool if I want to play games or install core Microsoft components on Linux. And by core Microsoft components, I mean like .NET or like Microsoft True Fonts. You know, stuff like that. This application lets you do that. But there's at least 10 or 15 other tools. And the one thing I want to point out, two tools. One is called Play on Mac, and the other one is called OS X Wine Builder. You can use Wine on Mac OS X. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if there is something you know that does work in Wine and your wife or whoever has a Mac computer and you want to run it on their computer as well, and there's not a native OS X version, you can get Play on Mac or one of the other tools to have it run on Mac.
Now, is that... I'm trying to articulate this. Is now he brings up those tools mainly because they are mainstays. They've been around for years. They've been successful. And you know what? That doesn't mean that they can't go away tomorrow, but that at least means that they have a track record with which you can reference, as opposed to, and that's not to discourage you from using newer tools, but we've been bitten this year before, and I'm sure we've been bitten in the coming months and years for being 100% reliant on one solution, and that solution either dying or going away, the developer getting too busy. So know your options. But yeah. To sort of spitball off of that, do you know any way to run OS X applications inside Linux?
I believe there is a tool. I am completely blanking on the name of it. And the last time I heard about it was at least eight months ago. And I heard, let's just say, far less than stellar results on it. And it was only because most of the desirable applications people want to run on Linux from Mac are core Mac applications, like iTunes, mm-hmm. GarageBand, and because they're so hard linked to the operating system, I believe they're going to be much more difficult to port over.
It's hard to get good performance if you're not running stock hardware or like a Hackintosh where it's completely devoted to the specific purpose where every single piece of hardware you're putting into it specifically to make sure it's 100% compatible.
Yes. I got it. And here's another real world example I have of that. The path of least resistance is always going to be the most successful. Emulating Mac stuff via a Wine type interface is measurably less successful than running a Hackintosh, where the Hackintosh, you have the entire system there that it can rely on and utilize and take advantage of. Kind of like how I believe cryogenics is utterly, completely pointless because the act of freezing properly is really supremely, utterly difficult to do, i.e., from everything I read, you can't do it now. But what is much more likely is downloading your entire brain into a computer. I think that's a path of much less resistance, i.e., I believe that is going to be more successful first before anything like cryogenics is actually successful.
Well, then one way to find out, I suppose. I know. There's some great sci-fi, which completely shoots your theory out of the water. But
well, bottom line, I'm not freezing my head. Right. Period. So we can just skip on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Next is something I literally learned about minutes before the podcast, a perfect example of people stepping up, sharing something they think I already know about, and I never heard of it before. By the man with one of the most glorious names I've ever heard in IRC, and that is Honky Magoo. Which is a fantastic name.
Yep.
He told me about Rasplex, RASPLEX. Mm-hmm. As quick as I can do it, pre-thing. I literally just got a Chromecast the other day. Chromecast to me is one of the most frictionless ways to gain spousal A approval for IPTV type content.
Yep.
Break. Plex is to me one of the best media server experiences you can have on any operating system. You can run the server on Windows, Mac, or Linux. Break. Plex is getting Chromecast support. Not yet, but it is, which means it will be both a great tool for my wife to watch her Netflix, and it will be a great tool for me to watch my Plex stuff. Hmm. Yeah. But Rasplex is an isolated, dedicated operating system for your Raspberry Pi to turn it into a Plex media client. Mm-hmm. So you have your server running on your box downstairs. This is a way to get Plex content from a Raspberry Pi to a television set or a computer. I love the idea of this. I love the actual interface to it because it's a dedicated interface for Plex that is very easy on the eyes, very easy to understand. Honky Magoo said he had slight issues with quality. I don't know if that's because of network speeds or hardware acceleration or component cables or, you know, cables going from the Pi to his television set. But I will say, if he runs Cacti on his network, he'll know if the issue is the network.
Right, and I'm not going to go into super detail about this, but I'm having a similar issue I have another point after this, but the performance on your Raspberry Pi will ultimately depend on also what video format it's in and what codec the media player is using with which to play the media. I'm trying, well, let's just say for a certain project I have going on at the moment, I'm testing out a lot of different things, the Raspberry Pi. I don't know if I communicated this to you, Dor, but I know there's a specific listener of ours which is screaming at his, whatever he's listening to right now, going, but I told you guys about this weeks ago. And that is Peter Bukowitz, aka Spaceman Pete, who, when I threw out something to Google Plus about media players and Raspberry Pi, he immediately came back with Rasplex. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah. And I don't know if he sent it to you and I or just me. I can't remember. But regardless, he told me about this weeks ago. And yeah, if you guys haven't checked out Plex, I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to any sort of a media server interface, it's got to look good. It just has to for family use. It has, because, I mean, if you look at all the solutions, if you're talking direct set-top boxes, aka the Roku, the Chromecast, which, I mean, you know, it's a set-top solution, we'll call it that. Or if you're talking about, you know, Apple TV or any sort of, like, you know, the Western Digital or the Toshiba or, like, Google TV, you know, they all have slick interfaces. So for me, I could do it all for a command line. I don't care, right? But if I'm bringing it into the home, plugging it into the main TV, saying, hey, honey, I digitized all our DVDs and Blu-rays, and here it is right here. And if it's some crap interface that's slow, she's not going to use it. So just looking at the screen plot, the screenshots of Plex, let alone Rasplex, I was sold right away. And from what you're telling me, Dor, and from what everybody else has been telling me the past few weeks, the functionality is there. But specifically for the Raspberry Pi, you have to jump a little bit of hoops or at least do some testing in the beginning to figure out, get the software right, figure out the right video format, and from there, you'll be gold.
Yeah, I will say this. The only downside, the only bad thing about the Raspberry Pi is the core processor is not open. Now, some people say that affects the video issues. I don't know. I can't tell. I'm not sure. I just know on me, my experience, I got good audio quality. I never got great audio quality. And that might have been, again, me. It's just one of those things, honestly, you got to play with. And I do believe, and first of all, I got to apologize for the guy. I'm sorry if he did mention Rasplex and I did not catch it. That is really ignorant of me, and I apologize. This seems new, and that's the break I'll give it. It's new. Mm-hmm. I do believe it will get better. It's just a question of, you know, how long it's going to take for it to get better.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, Plex is already an existing property, and I mean, you're seeing, you know, Pydora and, you know, the spinny of Debian, you know, they're constantly giving out updates to make it even more optimized, even more easily usable on and functional on the hardware. So yeah, I mean, I don't doubt for a minute that they're going to get it right. But in the meantime, I'm doing some research in order to figure out exactly what you need to do to get the best possible quality. Because if you're creating a media server at home, or if you're creating like a kiosk, it's in a loop video, which is something I'm doing at work, then, you know, I can't take in a $300 or $400 desktop. I can't leave a laptop dedicated. If I can spend less than $80 on a Raspberry Pi and some hardware and an SD card, a nice SD card to do that, then that's a more cost-effective solution. And not only for that type of environment, but for potentially home use. And I got to tell you, I have 5 15-foot shelves screwed into my living room wall that are containing nothing but DVDs and Blu-rays. And
oh my lord!
Yeah, it's nuts. I'll take a photo and put it on Google Plus later. It's 4 or 5 shelves. But
and Hollywood thanks you, Barack Obama.
No doubt.
Thanks you.
No doubt. No doubt. And to think that I can fit all of that on a large hard drive or two, and just have it at my wife's fingertips, as opposed to switch this disc, make sure it's, you know, put this in this player in this room and this and that, and just have it all throughout my house. It's the future's a wonderful thing. I'll say that.
Yeah, and I will say yes. The gimmick about video is the extension almost means nothing, because the extension is just the container. How the stuff is actually formatted is the underlying thing. Now, what I will say, my cop out has always been, I encode using Handbrake, and I go with their presets, and I literally encode it a step down in quality versus what I think I'm going to view it as, only because I lowered the bar. It should be easier to send over my network, and it should be easier for my device to display at a not 1080p resolution. I have bad eyes. My TVs are not true HD. My TVs are ED, enhanced definition.
Well,
so
in that
they
case,
come
it
across
makes sense.
My experience fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love Handbrake. Handbrake to me is a tool where you don't have to know the deep, dark secrets of encoding to get decent quality.
No, Handbrake, the just like you're saying, stock presets are good. There's also a good one called Acid Rip. Acid Rip,
yes.
Yeah, Acid Rip. I wanted to say Acid Burn, but that's not right. But that's also very good, and you can get in there and do some really, really good, really, really good things with not only quality but aspect ratio. Throw in subtitles, subtitle files, in case you're doing anime that don't have the stock subtitles on the disc, things like that. So, a lot of good solutions out there. We're getting off topic, but yeah, Razplex, thumbs up.
Yeah,
glad to hear that you're exposed to it.
Yeah, now I just gotta use it, because I was already told if I unplug the Chromecast from the television set, I'm going to get a finger cut off. So I'm going to have to use it someplace else, is the bottom line. Okay. One more quick pie thing. OCR.org.UK. I have no idea what that is, but it's not optical character recognition. I do know that. Has a bunch of information on, amongst other things, Raspberry Pi stuff. They have computer science classes, basically, where you can learn a whole bunch of stuff about Raspberry Pi in a step-by-step, dare I say, school-like fashion. They have what they call recipe cards on how you can do a lot of different stuff on the Raspberry Pi hardware. And they have a lot of PDF docs on how to do, on how to program for Raspberry Pi hardware manipulation, is what I'll say. If you want to use it as one piece of a building block of more hardware, this to me seems like the place to go for, dare I say, human readable instructions on how to do it.
This is awesome.
Yeah. And I still have no idea what OCR stands for from this website. But, I'll say this. I like the website. I like the layout. It's a very horizontal and vertical structure.
OCR is Oxford, Cambridge, and RSA.
Gotcha. So, a big college, and a proprietary company.
There you go.
I guess, because RSA, I don't know.
Yeah.
But either way, I think it's definitely worth your time if you want to look more at Raspberry Pi hardware coding, I'll say.
Very cool.
Okay, the super quick next one I got from inspiration from your find on the secure tools that we had on that last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 16 power tools for Linux users. The couple tools I'll mention really quick that everyone should have heard me mention before. Test Disk. Cross-platform goodness, recovery, data greatness. Mm-hmm. TrueCrypt. If you've never heard of TrueCrypt, stop listening now. Go listen to something else for like 300 hours and then come back later. Bleach Bit, I've mentioned before, is kind of like CCleaner on Linux. I like it a lot. Gwake is another one. AutoKey is another one I abuse. Back in Time is a very simple backup tool that you can use. It's a little bit niche, but I do think the interface is usable for lots of people. The one tool I want to mention here that I've never heard of is called FSLint. F-S-L-I-N-T. It's a great tool for finding duplicate files, bad names, empty folders on your system. This is the kind of tool I honestly think system administrators should maybe like periodically run just for maintenance on a box. But there's plenty more, like I said, 16 of them, and that is at efytimes.com. Looked like a decent article to me. Some good tools in there, some good mentionings. But, of course, they didn't mention Kupfer, which immediately led to me writing them a harassment.
I was about to say, 16 should not be GNOME Do. It should be Kupfer.
Thank you. There we go. GNOME Do is so limited.
You and I know that. You know what we need to do? We just need to do a comprehensive 10-hour Kupfer video series.
Okay, I'm right behind you.
Okay.
I.e., I'll wait for you to do it.
Yeah, I was about to say. I've started.
Yeah, now, Kate, and then there's a super quick last mention. I don't remember if I said it last episode. Hand of Thief. Okay. People are saying to use ClamAV. ClamAV will never find Hand of Thief, even if it's on your system. Everything I read about ClamAV is it searches for Windows viruses on a Linux computer. They don't scan for Linux viruses or Trojans or malware or rootkits or anything on Linux, just Windows infections on Linux. So if you are using ClamAV or ClamTK, you have to understand you're looking for Windows infections. That's all I'll mention about that.
There you go.
Yeah. The next one was at blog.smartbear.com, another site I've never heard of before in my life. I have no idea how credible it is, but they had an article that agreed with me, so I wanted to mention it.
There you go.
That's the truth, because it's about stats, and stats can show anything you want them to show. Stats are easily manipulated, okay? They're stats. Here's a stat I liked, and it says open source jobs are hot, and we have the stats to prove it. There's little doubt in my mind there's genuine facts behind this. Linux-related jobs, open source jobs, WordPress jobs, Drupal jobs, these kind of jobs are only becoming more prevalent and in greater numbers, and the pay is respectable. They basically, like one of the things they said in this one, I know, no doubt in my mind is beyond true. Big data jobs grow by 127%. Okay. Big data is really completely owned by Linux because it's typically data sets that are so big, a single computer cannot access them all at a time. So you need clusters to access them. The perfect example of big data is Prism. NSA's Prism is data spanned across hundreds of servers over the earth, but you have a centralized interface to access dig filter through this big data. Those tools used to do that big data scraping and stuff is all in Linux. But the same can be said with Google searching their own data or Amazon searching their own data, but it's all using Linux. So if you're in need of a job, it's better now to start learning Linux than later.
Very cool. You know,
that's the whole gist of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you start doing the training now, I mean, actually a good friend of ours, who I won't name, was talking about, in a private chat about how, he didn't have some qualifications for a job he wanted to apply for. And I thought, if this guy doesn't have qualifications, then I certainly don't. So I better get on the ball. And I'm looking at some, because I obviously, I'm too busy right now to actually go take classes, perhaps early next year and beyond. But that doesn't mean I can't start buying books. It doesn't mean I can't start getting certifications online, you know, to start that education, start that knowledge. That way, if I do have to take actual classes, I hit the ground running and I can just blast right through it. So, yeah, exactly. with the more awareness that this gains, the more traction, I should say, you know, throughout the coming months and years, the easier you'll be able to step into that much needed role in the near future. And, you're only educating yourself for a better job or better position later. So cannot hurt whatsoever.
Yeah. And I'll also preface it with this. What I'm really saying is not you should focus all of your attention on open source or on Linux. What I'm saying is you should know as much as you possibly can know. If you're looking for enterprise type jobs with enterprise type tools and enterprise type networks, you have to know Windows and Linux. Mm-hmm. Unless you want a super specialized job, you only need to know one of those operating systems. Now, if you're working for a Mac shop, it's kind of pointless to know Windows because you're working on Mac. But if you do know the Linux and open source stuff, you can always add them in as network services to a Mac shop without added cost. You can only do better at your job with the knowledge of open source if you're a Mac person or a Windows person. If you're a Linux person and you don't know anything else but Linux, you kind of pigeonhole your possibilities. So learn it with something else is the really the best way to achieve success, in my opinion.
Well, and even in the case you get scared there, let's say you're really good at, I mean, let's say you work in a Mac shop, so you know how to handle the hardware, you know, the software, setting up servers and whatnot. But then you're really hung out to dry when potentially you lose that job. You need to go look for another one because your skill set is so narrow and focused. Yes, you're probably very good at your job, but if you have that background on top of some other items, which with you can apply to maybe a position at like an educational institution. I'm thinking of like, you know, Joel McLaughlin and Chad Wallenberg, who, you know, deal with a variety of hardware, software operating environments, you know, day in and day out. Then you're a more versatile, you know, potential candidate, a more versatile employee. They can get a lot more stuff done. Not only will that potentially help you land that job, but potentially, you know, a better starting salary, better for raises, and just overall a more valuable, you know, unit of that organization. So it can never hurt you.
Yep. Absolutely. Bottom line, the more you know, the more you'll get paid.
You got that right.
Yeah. Okay. One more I just wanted to throw out there. We're going to bump the rest of them.
Sure.
Disclaimer, haven't tried it. Why? Because I'm lazy.
And you're afraid it won't work.
Well, no. And I'm really not a television person, and I'm not a movie person. I don't like watching a lot of mind-numbingly laid-back content. You know? I don't. There is certain stuff I do watch on Netflix, I will say that. And it seems like more often than not, it's movies for throwbackreviews.com. Like we just did the Great Outdoors.
Yeah, which upset me the moment I saw that, only because I know that film inside and out. But I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to lay into you on not for being invited to a show on another show. I'm not going to, especially since
you
shouldn't. That's not even your show.
Exactly. That's why if you do, I will be upset because I'm just a person who's invited to be on that show. It's not my show.
Pontoon boat. Where we go? We're taking Omaha Beach. See, dude, I know the whole film.
I will say, I am blindly attracted to anything John Candy does. Mm-hmm. I think he was one of the most underappreciated actors of his time. But without that said, okay. So I do watch some Netflix. We do have a solution, in air quotes, on Linux, on Ubuntu, to watch Netflix. It uses a very streamlined, let's say seamless system of launching Wine and launching Firefox with flash support in full desktop mode. So it looks like you have a standalone Netflix application when it's actually running through Wine. Some people report very questionable results with that because of the added overhead of running it through Wine and Firefox and Flash for Windows kind of thing. So there is this new thing that says it will work. Now, it's by the same guy. That's one of the big, huge things that I have to say. It's by the same guy. So this guy knows what the hell he's doing, okay? It's called Pipe Light. P-I-P-E-L-I-G-H-T. Pipe Light. It's a way to use native emulated Silverlight on your Linux browser to watch Netflix. Max Dome, I've never heard of it. You can watch that too. Videos and more natively in Linux. Native is always faster. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Wine can be faster sometimes, but native is always going to have better support and more efficient and that kind of thing. So Pipelight is a project that he's working on. Supposedly, if you install it now, people report it's working for them. But because it's so early on, I wouldn't yet install Linux on a computer, on a home theater computer, hook it up to your television set, and then tell the wife, here's how you can watch Netflix, because it might break in a week.
Yep.
Okay, it's still early on, but it's the kind of thing, if you do really like your Netflix and you really want to run it on Linux, you need to pay attention to this.
Well, I'll also say it's very good for those people who don't have the budget for a secondary solution, much like, you know, like a potentially a Chromecast or, you know, a Roku or whatnot.
Dude, if you can't afford a Chromecast,
hey man,
you need to start selling livers or
you know,
something.
All of us don't own a podcasting network. We're not rolling in the cash.
Dude,
like
it's $35. That's like a steak.
Have you guys ever seen the game shows where, like, in those encased glass booths with money just hitting you like a tornado? Door, that's him all day when he's not at work. He just has a room upstairs with stacks of cash. He throws them in that air vent, and it just blows, you know, cash all over him. So if you don't have that situation going on,
you know me.
Dude, Chromecast, yeah. But even like low-end Roku's $49.99. But I'm saying, let's say you can't afford it, but you just don't want to spend money on entertainment. You're trying to pay off debt or whatever, right?
Right. Or what some people utterly insist on is, I first and foremost want a full desktop browser on my HT PC, and then I want Netflix.
Right.
If you use Linux, your full desktop browser experience is superb compared to almost anything else.
Of course, and a lot more functional. So let's say you do have that secondary machine or that laptop you just revived or that box you threw a hard drive in from a donation or whatever that's now just sitting there doing nothing. And you want to create that anyway. This is something you can try.
Right. Yep. And he does have a stable and daily PPAs. So if you go with the stable one, I feel fairly confident in saying it shouldn't break. But when it comes to spousal approval kind of stuff, I would run it on my own for like a month before I feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know you're going to be getting those phone calls. You're going to be getting woken up. Hey, by the way, my Mad Men, it's not working.
I will say, for instance, Chromecast is still new. Tonight, the wife launched the Possession from her phone to the Chromecast. Hit pause, went to the bathroom, came back, play. Hit pause, got up, got something to drink, hit play. Went to hit pause to put the kids in bed, and it just stopped working. The TV wouldn't stop playing the video. And on the phone, it wasn't responding right. So it's not perfect either. But I was very quickly able to remedy the situation, so I felt better about that. But that's like my personal proof that it isn't perfect either. And I will say, I literally just had my day made fantastic. Okay. One of the guys I had the God's honest pleasure of chatting with on nearly a weekly basis for well in excess of a year, just told me in IRC that he will hopefully see me at OLF.
John Neustetter.
John Neustetter. Because I'll say this. Cody coming to OLF, Martin coming to OLF, PC Freddy coming to OLF, Bauermeister coming to OLF, Red Dwarf coming to OLF, John Miller coming to OLF,
Russ the Beast
Joel McLaughlin coming to OLF, Russ coming to OLF, Russ's dad coming to OLF, seeing Kevin O'Brien, all that is fantastic. The guy I honestly didn't think I was going to ever be able to actually meet in person and shake his hand is John Neustetter. There's few guys out there, I will say this, who lended more moral support and genuine support to me as a person than John Neustetter. He's the guy who single-handedly put Linux Basics on his back and carried the responsibility of that server like a beast. And there's no way I could ever show him thanks enough. If he comes to OLF, I can buy him a beer.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't he also still run the Mumble server?
He still officially owns a Mumble server, and he also owns a project called Nice-20. I believe it's nice-20.org, where him and Unix Clubhouse put out a couple podcasts. Unix Clubhouse said he's going to try to see if they can jumpstart that, get it back going again. If they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. Whatever makes him happy, makes him happy. That's all I'll say.
Nice.
I can't forget Byer Brown, too. I'm going to get to see Byer Brown again, too, which hopefully the Pittsburgh BergCon. What's it?
Lenoxburg.
Lenoxburg, thank you very much. Gains momentum and keeps moving forward because that's one of the events I'm ecstatic about happening.
Oh, yes. There will be fun to be had. Now, isn't John Neustetter, isn't he in Canada?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I know. And I'll say this. Do you remember we had, I don't know if you remember, we had an earthquake in the East Coast like a year ago.
Okay.
And it was so big. I'm in Maryland. I'm 99% John Neustetter also said he felt it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big. The only person we'll be missing is Knucklehead Tech because we'll have Russ there, John Neustetter there, me there. That's Linux Basics. The core beginning of Linux Basics, except for the slacker, uncommon slacker we all know is Knucklehead Tech. With a glorious beard, by the way.
Glorious beard. Second to none in the beard department. I will say that he's a family man, and he does a lot for them. I will say that.
Well, he's a son of a... He's a family man. Yes.
That being said, I'm partnering with him. I'm his Linux convention life coach, as far as getting things together to make sure that he makes it to OLF 2014.
I would honestly happily give up like a pinky if I could have Neustetter, Russ, and Knucklehead Tech on the same place, physical place.
Mm-hmm. We'll make it happen. We'll make it happen.
Do I have to give up a pinky?
No. If anything, we'll just say it's a beard convention.
Good man.
Because he hasn't listened to this show. He's too busy.
Right. And we can tape some fur onto Russ's beard.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. His magnificently manicured facial hair.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure he's in the chat, too. He's probably cackling right now.
Yeah.
Okay. That is it for the topics this week, Door. Where can we find you online?
Ponish.com, easy one-stop shop. Mail at ponish.com. Any communications with the network itself, I highly encourage to go through there if you want network speak. Mm-hmm. If you want an email to go to me and Cody, don't mail it to mail@ponish.com because it might take me 3 days to forward it to Cody.
Yeah.
Google Plus, Stephen McLaughlin. Very easy, frictionless way to communicate with me, but you also have to realize there is a huge flaw with Google Plus communications. Once I read it and once I comment on it, it's nearly impossible to go back to that.
Yeah.
So if you send me a link or a note in there that you expect me to read on the show, expect it to not be read on the show because I can never go back and find it.
You can, but it's a lot of work. I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done it.
Picture it like this. Google Plus is a very narrow table. When you talk, It's like you're putting something else on the table. Very quickly, things fall off that table.
Or you could think of it as your correspondence is on a 3x5 card. And once I read it, I toss it into a room with another bunch of other cards, too. And I need, later on, I need to go find it, but I need to read through a bunch of the other cards just to find yours. I can't just walk over to it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And they're all white, and they're all index ruled. There's no difference between
college ruled, not wide ruled. We're not in third grade.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Thanks. Sorry.
This isn't, And there's no crayon here.
It's Wii stuff.
Yeah, Wii, what? Okay. Yeah. All right. So thank you for that. There were a few announcements. Obviously, please check out podnuts.com. The links for the new shows are already up there. And keep your eyes peeled, because there are some more shows coming soon, some of which you guys will be happy about, one of which I know you would be a huge announcement, which you'll be surprised about and happy, and then some great new, fresh content, which we're bringing to the network, which is going to expand. And yeah, if you guys think that you're picky by your podcast, trust me, with the amount that Dor and I listen to, and Tracy, any of the guys involved in bringing content to the network, we are also very picky, and much like what Dor said earlier, we want to make sure that we bring something into the network that is not only going to be beneficial, but we feel that we'll be in it for the long haul.
Yeah, my idea is I want to bring such personalities and content that Leo Laporte himself would be jealous.
There you go. Okay, so Ohio Linux Fest 2013. Check out ohiolinux.org. Dor's doing a talk. I am not. My talk did not get picked up.
You'll be talking. It will just be with a beer in your hand.
Right. Yeah. There won't be an official talk in a room, but I'll be screaming, and there will be people looking. And if you want to be one of those people, please follow either Dor and I on Google Plus. We do have a Google event page set up at the moment, which I'm resetting because I made a mistake. But by the time you hear this, it'll be corrected. So it's like it never happened. But even if you can't make it, definitely continue to check out that Google event page, because we'll be posting links to content created at the fest. Photos we'll be taking, and all photos everybody else will be taking and posting there, so you can get an idea of what you're missing, just in case you're kind of on the fence this year, because I guarantee you, once you see some of this stuff, you're going to be booking your flight for next year and getting those hotel reservations ready, because it's one heck of a time. Okay. Also, we're still trying to get guests booked for Podnuts Daily. If you are a computer tech, or also the show Podnuts, if you're a computer tech or a representative from an organization that put out a service or product that you think would benefit from being exposed to our audience, please email me to cody@podnuts.com, and I will send you a list of available dates. We got some great guests lined up. Dor and Steve, even back in the day, always shot high as far as trying to get guests that they thought they might not ever be able to land on the show. And I just got a really good guest, somebody that I'm excited to bring on. So definitely stay tuned for that. My shout out of the week goes to Spaceman Pete for bringing Razplex a little bit earlier than, what was the guy's name again?
Honky Magoo.
Honky Magoo. Yeah. Honky Magoo is a good name for sure. I don't know. We may maybe get a survey going on which is better, Honky Magoo or Spaceman Pete. But it's still.
I know. I'll say push. Yes. I don't want to decide one or the other, because they're both good.
It still doesn't beat my gamer tag, which I don't want to say on here on the show, because then I'll get endless requests. If you guys really want to game with me online somewhere, anywhere, send me an email to Cody@Linux, or hit me up on Google Plus. I'll send it to you. We can game there. I use the same across all platforms, so it's quite hilarious. Speaking of Ohio Linux Fest, we will have a table on Saturday in the vendor area. We'll be giving away some swag, some shirts. Dor showed me some stickers that he had created, and they're awesome. So, and those are going to be very limited. So if you're going, please come by as early as you can Saturday, no matter how much fun you had Friday night. And let me tell you, I have to wake up extra early, or just stay awake Friday to make sure that I'm at the vendor area early Saturday, because that's when all the good stuff gets put out early. Trust me. I think last year I went to sleep at 6:30. I woke up at 7:30 and I was there on the floor at 8, ready, bag in hand, ready to scoop stuff off the table into the bag. So it's going to be a good time.
I will encourage people now, if you want good swag, stand 6 inches behind Cody Cooper, listen to what he says to these vendors, and repeat what he says mm-hmm. once he steps away from the table.
Because here's the thing, and I might be spoiling it, but whatever. There are specific things you can ask and specific things you can say to them. Much like in a video game where you have to talk to certain characters in order to have them give mm-hmm. you certain items.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, I got an awesome item from a table last year, and people, where did you get that? How much was it? I was like, I didn't pay anything because I asked this person this question, and they gave me one. So, yes, mm-hmm. hit me up at the fest if you're going to be there, or if you just want to see it in action. If you can bring a camera, you can be right over my shoulder. We'll get it done, and then you can just benefit from my awesomeness. You're welcome.
Oh, and LLF news. The Admiral, Jonathan T. Nato, is coming now.
That's correct. He doesn't have a talk, but he will be there. And I guarantee you.
Oh, and he'll be talking too, with a beer in his hand.
Yeah. he won't know what the beer looks like, but he can tell you what it tastes like.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great news to have him involved. The stellar cast, as it were, that's going to be there was awesome 2 weeks ago, but now with John Neustetter and Jonathan Nato, the Admiral coming. There's going to be some shenanigans. I'm just hoping I don't get arrested.
Hey, you won't believe this, Cody. I literally had a dream last night that I got a little bit too intoxicated.
You?
Yeah. You and a couple people were standing around me. We left an area. I stopped to alleviate some stomach pressure. And right as soon as I did, a cop pulled up. And you guys were shocked at my politeness with the cop, even though the level of intoxication I had, to where I just asked the cop, I literally need 30 seconds unless you want to mess in your car. And he didn't want to mess in his car, so he waited politely, and I politely told him, yes, I am very inebriated. Please, do you want to administer cuffs? And he said, yes. And I turned around, and I said, do you want to take me to your station? He said, yes. And I said, well, which way is your automobile? And I went in and I sat there. And then when I woke up from being inebriated, I looked up and outside of the cell was everybody from OLF there waiting for me to get out on my own recog. And the police officer then opened the gate, shook my hand, thanked me for being polite to him. And then we went on our merry way and I got inebriated again.
Well, that beats the hell out of the dream I had the other night about running that stable of unipegacorns, which is a crossbreed between a unicorn and a pegasus, and taking over the land, being the hero of everyone because I slayed all the armies of monsters. But that doesn't pale in comparison to the piece of fiction you just blurted out to the internet right there, fella.
And I don't know where it came from, because not even one time did I even see a man of authority closer than 300 feet to me when I was in Columbus every time.
Yeah,
and that's because it's a college town, and I believe they have lower standards of public behavior, I'll say, to where you, I would think, really have to act horrendous to get their attention.
Unlike Nelf, where it was every 2 feet, there was a cop car almost.
Yeah. Yes, but I will say they were very polite in the fact that they didn't arrest any of us.
That's true. Yeah, but then again, we were there on St. Patty's Day, so it was like a bunch of chimpanzees running around with machetes. It's just who's screaming the most, and that's
valid,
the whole game.
Valid, yeah.
So we were well shielded there.
Oh, good news about Nelf too. The probability has increased that Tracy Holzer will be making it to Nelf.
Right.
So next year at Nelf, we should have, for all intents and purposes, Admiral Jonathan T. Nato, Ambassador Bruce Patterson, Tracy Holtz, Joe McLaughlin, Russ Winner. Last year, Murph went. Murph's one of the nicest guys, by the way, too. He's just good. He's really good.
Very good dude.
So Nelf should also be packed with utterly cool people.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be there for sure.
Cool.
Yes. I'm not missing out on that stuff.
Well, double deuce, man. Double deuce.
Dude, I don't care for it, MIT. We're going downtown.
Oh, why not? It's just a little train ride away. That's a beautiful thing about Boston.
That's right. Double deuce. I thought you'd be bigger. Okay.
Exactly.
So, and speaking of Jonathan T. Nato, Admiral Jonathan T. Nato, please check out the ACF.co. That is, of course, the Accessible Computing Foundation, bringing technology to the hands of those who are, would have otherwise been left behind, those people with disabilities. And so you can become a regular contributor to the ACF for as little as $2 a month. And let me tell you, that money goes a long way into all sorts of development and behind-the-scenes work to expand the awareness of this software, which if it got into the hands of some people, it would literally save them thousands of dollars, or at least get them using a computer for the very first time, which of otherwise they thought was before this utterly impossible due to specific limitations.
Yeah, you can empower a worldwide community of people to have a life and a job and an internet presence and a career.
Yep.
And I'll say you will, back up the ACF, or you will increase your contribution to them, I will gladly give you any Linux book I have on me. The one I know I'm going to be bringing is called How Linux Works. Seems like a very comprehensive guide for anyone who wants to get into the meat and potatoes, the bone, the skeletal structure of Linux.
Very cool. And where should we, could we maybe forward a receipt from PayPal to you to potentially be drawn up to win that or something?
I'll just give it out. I'll just hand it out.
Okay.
Period. I don't expect someone to come up to me and lie about such a thing. I will hand them the book. And if I find out they did lie, I will then find them and I will kill them.
Yep. Punch right in the throat.
Something like that.
Yeah, there you
go. Yes. And I hope to have a lot of extra quote unquote goodies to give out at OLF, but we have to wait and see.
I'm bringing some stuff, and there might be, I'll say it here. There might be an allusion to a project I'm working on, which I'll share with people there as a early release. So even more incentive to come out. And here's your commitment I'm making. I'm not shaving until after OLF. I'm not. This
same here.
This poor excuse for a beard is only going to get a quarter of an inch longer between now and then, but I'm keeping it.
It's less than 2 full weeks away. I expect to be fully scruffed by then.
Well, because you're a real man with testosterone. See, mine has to push through the obesity and the whatever else there is. It just doesn't work. I mean, it is fully red though. There is no gray in it. So I'm not even as cool as you would be when you have your full beard tomorrow.
You could always dye it. And I will say, yes, at the age of 15, I had the ability to get served alcohol because of my beard. I accredit it to the beard.
Very cool. Very cool. In addition to the ACF, you can also check out, is it sonar-linux.org, I believe?
Sounds exactly right to me, sir.
Yes, which is Jonathan's custom distribution for use for people with disabilities in order to utilize special software rolled into an Ubuntu spin, which will help them get off the ground and running. So definitely, and you can also support that project as well. Check out the links at theacf.co or at sonar-linux.org. And that is our show for the week. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Do you sit on your butt all day? Are you tired of watching the weight pile on? Are you sick of what you see in the mirror and just too busy to do anything about it? The 28 Workouts Fitness Program was created with you in mind. Shed the weight and get into the best shape of your life. Workouts are only 25 minutes per day. No more than 4 days per week. No gym needed. No equipment needed. Instant download. Go to www.28workouts.com today for more details. Your time is now. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.